This episode of The Stack was first broadcast on the 17th of October 2015 on Monocle 24.
Down the hall of calendars, bypassing the Bible section and through the rows of publishing house exhibitors, art books, poetry books, children's books, newspapers, magazines, the vastness that is Messe Frankfurt is under our magnifying glass at the Frankfurt Book Fair today on The Stack. On today's show, with hundreds of thousands of visitors flocking to Frankfurt this week, we'll be taking a closer look at what they've all come to see. We'll be hearing from the Süddeutsche Zeitung's managing editor about why the internet probably needs a few more rules. We'll also crack the spine of one of Germany's best-known titles, Zeit Magazine, and discuss what it takes for a publication to succeed.
Everybody's a blogger these days, so if you want to be doing something different, I would tell a 20-year-old, well, you know, just start off a printed magazine.
And later in the show, Thomas Linder, CEO of the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, gives us his insight into the pressures facing the German newspaper industry and why he's still happy to be in the world of print. All that coming up on this very special edition. Don't applaud, ladies and gentlemen, of The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tyler Brulé, coming to you from the Frankfurt Book Fair. Over 300,000 visitors are expected to pass through the doors of the Messe Frankfurt Conference Center, with more than 7,000 exhibitors competing for their attention. And as with so many other German newspaper publishers, the Süddeutsche Zeitung is an unmissable presence, and not to mention, as we were saying at the top of the show, also the likes of Die Zeit with Zeit Magazine, the Frankfurter Allgemeine as well. And it's one thing that as we've been roaming around, and of course I'm happy to say that I was roaming with our editor, Andrew Tuck. Andrew, it's incredible to see this convergence here. You hear book fair, but it's amazing how many other people who are in the business of buying paper every day also see a presence at this major event.
Well, yes, there's everyone from magazines to newspapers. There's a real incredible ecosystem here. And I think the word fair doesn't quite do it justice. It's like its own country. It's so huge, the numbers of people swilling around. And I think we said as we walked through to come to the show today that really it would take you forever to go and see every stand. It's an impossibility to see this whole fair. It's unbelievably huge.
And as we were saying at the intro as well, I mean, you have almost entire halls dedicated to, you know, calendars. You've got a whole self-help section. As I was sort of surprised to find the sort of world of sort of quasi-religious Jesus will show you the way self-help the other day. I mean, you just sort of venture down these aisles. You're like, hey, what's going to happen here?
In fact, I just thought I'd found a good medical publisher. There's a stand over here with everyone's dressed as doctors with stethoscopes. It turns out they're the book jacket clinic. So if you've got a bad book jacket, you can go and they'll sort it out for you. So that they're
well, they must have an enormous queue, because I have to say there are no shortage of ugly book jackets as well. Even a few ugly jackets walking around. But it's interesting that everyone, I mean, the amount of deals that are being done, of course, you know, that is a big part of the fair, but every mechanical element of getting a book or a piece of print out is involved in the mix here.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is, you know, from the minute you wake up in the morning, you go down to breakfast, there are authors who are here on their own trying to get a deal, sell their works, taking individual kind of meetings. Then you step into the halls, and that scale is also interesting, I think, because often when you go to some of the big fairs like Milan for furniture, you have a real sense it's the big players that dominate. But here, what's interesting is there are people here who are tiny, tiny publishers as well as the big players. And as you said, you know, that world of paper is it's calendars. It's anybody who touches a piece of, you know, raw paper is keen to be here.
Andrew, we've got a lot of, I mean, many, many other editors to talk to. And as I said, coming up, we'll be talking to Thomas Lidner, the CEO of the Frankfurter Allgemeine. We'll also be talking to Christoph Amend and very much speaking about this, the incredible special they did, the making of the paper to bring that issue out. But up next, we're going to be talking to Dr. Alexandra Borchardt. She's the managing editor of the Süddeutsche Zeitung. This is The Stack. We're in Frankfurt. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And you're back with a very special edition of The Stack here on Monocle 24. We are indeed in Frankfurt this week at the Buchmesse. We're going to start with Dr. Alexander Borchardt, managing editor of the Süddeutsche Zeitung. You were just on stage talking about this wonderful, it's just the most beautifully formed thing I've seen a newspaper do in quite some time. You do a series of small books, I guess, where you're bringing in your top editors' correspondence to write passionately about topics they feel very important about. This is Das Internet zwischen Diktatur und Anarchie, and it's 10 themes on democratizing the digital world. That's a lot of themes for us to get through. We're not going to probably do all 10. But tell me, what was sort of the principal driving idea, Dr. Borchardt, behind doing this?
Yeah, the principal driving idea is that the internet has always been about freedom, but unfortunately, lots of people understand different things, what freedom is all about. And my central argument is that democracy is actually about power, and it's about rules, rules that restrict power, power for the weak and power for the strong. And so the internet, the digital world, needs rules.
Within the book, are you laying out a process to get us there? Because as we see today, I mean, it is a free-for-all. There's such a loud voice. Everything should be free. Information should be open. I mean, this is a problem that, of course, you as also being in the newspaper business, even there is sort of a moral struggle between The Guardian on one side saying, let's make all information free. You know, we know that journalism also costs money as well. So what are the process or what are the steps that you take us through to maybe taming this beast?
Yeah, I give you 10 reasons where the internet conflicts with democracy, and I'll tell you in this book what one can do about it. And I think my first reason, and the most central one from my point of view, is the power of institutions, and that actually the internet erodes institutions, and that hits close to home, because as journalists, quality media, Süddeutsche Zeitung is the biggest quality daily newspaper we have in Germany, as institutions are concerned, trust in institutions has been eroded by people who always think they know better, and the respect for institutions and their capacities that has been vanishing. That doesn't really say that institutions are always right. To the contrary, you have to do things to open up institutions, and institutions are very much called upon to reform themselves. But media also has to reform themselves. We have to listen more to our readers, we have to listen more to our audience, and we have to have a two-way communication. But still, institutions are important, because in the end it comes down to who gets the job done and who takes the responsibility. And the point is, only institutions get the job done when it's really dragging and boring, or when it's really getting down to a big crisis. And only institutions can be held responsible. And it's not the single citizen who voices an opinion and then is gone.
Dr. Alexander Borchardt, the book is Das Internet zwischen Diktatur und Anarchie. You are listening to Monocle 24. This is The Stack. We are coming to you from the Frankfurt Buchmesse. We'll be back after this.
Do you ever feel like you've missed out on something? Have you been on the road? Miss the latest world news? Then catch up with The Recap, the best of the week's cutting-edge reports, comment, news and features from all the flagship shows on Monocle 24. Join us every Saturday from 1400 London time or via the Monocle 24 app.
And you are back with a very special edition of The Stack here on Monocle 24. We are coming to you from Hall Number 4. It's quite an amazing setup here, because just around the corner we have our friends from Gestalten. We have very respected publisher Hatje Kantz is also here with all of their amazing imprints on architecture and art. Lars Müller are also in the area as well. And just an extraordinary array of guests. Berlin also being quite a key feature where many of these businesses are based. And on that note, I would have to say undoubtedly one of Germany's best-known titles internationally, Zeit Magazine, is, of course, it's a weekly newspaper. It's got a supplement as well, and we talk about it frequently, not just in the office, but of course it comes up on this program from time to time. Christoph Ament is the editor-in-chief of the publication. And I met him earlier to talk about the changes the title has faced in the midst of an evolving publishing world and the bubble that the German industry can sometimes appear to be living in. I'd say it's a very good bubble.
I think that we have a new generation of readers that people didn't expect. I mean, media companies and media experts have been talking about digitalization for so many years, and now they're surprised that suddenly if you go to stores like Do You Read Me in Berlin or the Kiosk Cafe that you just opened up in London, that there's a new generation of readers who buy printed products, who buy magazines, who love to buy beautifully designed and printed magazines. Of course, what they do, first things they do, they take their iPhone and do a photo of the magazine and put it on Instagram. But just that fact that it shows that you're trying to define yourself by the magazines that you read. And it's printed. It's not digital.
I'm keen. What is the digital life of Zeit Magazine?
We have a website that is we relaunched last year. And by now is part of Zeit Online, the bigger news website. And by now it's always on the within the top two or three sections of the whole news website. It's it has all of the things that you need today. It's totally fully responsive, so you can people use it on their mobiles. It's very successful on the mobile. So we do everything like that, and I think it's important to reach out to readers that might not have heard about Zeit Magazine. You know, for example, we did a story about the German comedian Jan Böhmermann earlier this year, and he's sort of a star for maybe the teenagers and early 20s. In Germany. So we did this magazine, and it was a kind of a satire version of the cover, was making a joke about the Kim Kardashian cover that she did with Paper Magazine last year. So he kind of played around with that. So we published the magazine, and if it only would have been printed, our readers would have, taken a look, would have seen it and read it and, might have liked the cover or not. But what happened when we posted it online and put it on the social networks, it reached so many younger readers, and you could see them tweeting like a 16-year-old from a little village in south of Germany saying, now, what is Zeit Magazine? They're doing a story about my favorite comedian. Who are they? So it's a great way of actually reaching out to people that, might not otherwise know about our magazine.
Do you think that translates, or does it matter if it translates into that 16-year-old getting on their bicycle and going to the kiosk then to actually experience the real thing?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know the 16-year-old, but that's actually the way I kind of discovered newspapers and magazines. I heard about it, saw something on TV, or a friend talked about it, and then I went to the next newsstand, and it might not have, usually they didn't have that kind of magazine, so I had to go to another one or the bigger city and look for it and search for it. And I think, that's how you discover me. I don't know about you discovering media when you were a teenager, but it was
pretty. I was surrounded. We didn't have coffee tables in our houses. We just had, or no side tables. We just had stacks of magazines in my house. I say we were sort of the family without furniture. We just had magazines. So anyway.
But didn't you discover, a magazine on your own? I mean, like.
Yeah. And I was lucky. I was lucky enough to go into Montreal every Saturday, or go in to pick up my dad, and there was the destination to meet was always this tobacco shop and international newsstand, and I discovered my first magazine I discovered was called Navy International, because it was at that age I didn't think I was going to join the Navy, but I thought I was very interested in ships and all things military related, and that was my big treat. That was the magazine that I used to get once a month, and even then I think it cost $16. My parents thought I was nuts.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I remember when my first subscription that I did was with a magazine called Tempo, which was sort of a big magazine, I mean, in terms of recognition, a big magazine. But, the funny thing was, I remember I was 14 or 15 years old, and I had this magazine, a monthly, sent to me at our home. And I really precisely remember one summer, the issue didn't arrive. And I kept on asking myself, why is it not arriving? And another week passed by, and another week passed by, and then the magazine arrived, the copy arrived at our home, and the next week, the next issue was there. I thought, something's wrong here. I mean, that's strange. I mean, but I had nobody to talk to. I was 14 years old, so I just accepted it in a way. And many years later, I learned that the editor at the time, Markus Peichel, who of course is one of the most innovative magazine editors in Germany, was actually fired shortly afterwards because he was not able to put out the magazine in time. Mm. So that was a lesson that I learned, especially for the weekend.
Don't miss a deadline.
You can fool around. You can put in different papers in a magazine, but it has to come out next week.
Do German journalists and editors look back at a certain golden era when you meet colleagues? You mentioned Marcus Peichel and all of these. Maybe he wouldn't like us calling him an elder statesman. Maybe he would. But do people recall a certain time here that was special? I remember one of my favorite Stern stories. There was someone in the Kulturredaktion who used to summer in Tuscany, and I'm not sure if this is just Hamburg mythology, but they would move his grand piano down to his summer house, and he would be in Italy for 4 months as the culture editor, and of course it was very important as a culture editor that you're able to tickle the ivories, and then pack everything up from outside Siena or wherever you are, and then and off it goes back to Hamburg. And that really sort of sticks with me. But I mean, I do remember in the days of writing for Stern, and I remember getting a cover story once in Stern. So, I'd agreed one fee, and then they doubled it because it was the cover story. I mean, I hate to say it, but we would never do that today. I mean, you should be so lucky that you got the cover of Monocle. I'm not sure what happens at Die Zeit if, oh, guess what? It's a bonanza. Do you suddenly sort of double someone's rate? Are those days gone?
Well, those days are gone, I think. But I'm not sure if it's only for the worse, because we live in such exciting times, so many things happening at the same time. We know so much more what's happening in the magazine world. I mean, just by looking at blogs like Cover Junkie, you're informed about every magazine that's published all the time. So you have so many inspirations. It's great. It's fantastic. I mean, 30 years ago, this didn't happen. I mean, people... German magazines just license articles from international magazines, just republish them. You can't do that anymore.
No.
And that's great. That's great.
But is there a certain luxury as well to live in your little bubble, to be in your own arrondissement of editorial, and also not sort of be looking at what every cover is doing and just getting on with it?
Well, the thing is, with Zeit magazine, we do covers for Zeit every other week. So a cover story of Zeit magazine is actually the cover story of Zeit. So there's a lot of pressure of selling the weekly issue. And on Monday morning, you get the numbers. And then you see, is it up or down? So that's good for us. Because usually, a magazine like us, we don't have to care about circulation or how the cover is doing. But we have to do how our cover story is doing. We did a cover story about the girls from Boko Haram who actually could flee from the terror organization a couple of weeks ago. And it was, the pressure was on. Would it sell or wouldn't it sell? And would it work at the newsstands? It did.
But did you feel the pressure as an editor? Because I imagine it wasn't the cheapest story to do. There was a big investment, financially, emotionally in that story. But was it always clear that it should be a cover or it could still exist as a great story? But did you feel you had to also square it by making it work commercially in a way?
No, we didn't have to square it. But the thing is, if you do a story like this on the cover of Zeit and it's not doing well on the newsstands, then of course, those kind of stories will have a problem in the future. So it is a fight for good journalism.
And how did it do?
It did well. It did really well. And the reader's reaction was really great and really overwhelming. And now the writer is turning it into a book that's going to come out next year, and we'll actually put the story into our next international issue of Zeit magazine, so it will be published in English in spring 2017.
Just before we go, are you encouraged by the state of young journalism when you have your intake of practicants and interns in this market? Is there still a good level? Because I do think Germany is a bit of a bubble. I think that by law, if I put out a magazine, it has to be put on the newsstand. That is why that's why it's right. So expansive, which people don't know. And I was having a very good discussion with one of our other guests a little earlier about that, which is it's such an interesting construct in this market. So does that, one could say, well, maybe that also makes people quite lazy. I just make up any magazine and I can find the funding to get it on, and it will get on newsstand if I'm able to print it somehow. But yet, at the same time, I think that also creates a wonderful culture for print and paper, and that's partly why we're here. And yet I think in other parts of the world, everyone's sort of pushing young journalists to be a blogger first, be on Twitter first, it's about your brand name first, etc.
If you look at young founders of magazines in Germany, for example, Ricarda Mester, who founded Flaneur magazine, which is a totally radical concept, like, you know, do a whole issue about one street in one city. She's 25. So she's like the next generation of magazine founders, and it's a printed-only magazine. It costs 15 euros. And I think that's the kind of way you have to do it if you want to, you know, start a new magazine. I mean, everybody's a blogger these days. You know, it's nothing special. There's nothing really to write home about, I think. So if you want to be doing something different, I would tell a 20-year-old, well, you know, just found a, you know, start off a printed magazine. I think, and it's great for a magazine like ours, like, you know, the sort of the bigger magazines like Zeit Magazine, that we look at those magazines and see what's happening there, because many innovations in our market are happening there, and you can be inspired. It's great.
Christoph Ammann, their editor-in-chief of Zeit Magazine, speaking to me a little bit earlier. You can hear more of that interview from Thursday's edition of The Briefing. Go to monocle.com or iTunes or SoundCloud for more. You're listening to The Stack. Back in a moment.
Monocle Films visits a trio of women's wear designers in London, Brussels and Copenhagen, daring women to dress in a different way.
There's two different markets in a way. There's like the fashion market, which is really unappealing to me, and then there's the clothing market, which is much more appealing and making good quality products.
Women's Wear Heroes, our latest Monocle Briefing film, now playing in the film section on monocle.com.
You're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24, coming to you from Hall Number 4, which is really the hub of all great titles devoted to the visual arts, architecture, design, and many, many more things. I should probably say, talk a little bit also just about our current setup. We are on a very large, I'd almost say aircraft carrier size stand that Monocle has set up. At one end, we have a branch of our cafe. In the middle, a bit of a walk down memory lane, just looking at all of the great print that has come out from over the years. At the far end, we of course have a small pop-up store as well. Lots of people mingling, reading, and enjoying the very, very lovely All Press coffee. Now, it wouldn't make sense to be in Frankfurt for the book fair and not talk to, of course, really probably one of the most respected names in German journalism, if not international journalism, the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung. A bit earlier, I had a chance to talk to the newspaper CEO, Thomas Lidner. Like much of the industry, this giant of German publishing has faced a challenge or two of its own, but by testing the waters with new concepts and enhancing its brand, the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung is throwing shade on cynical predictions and marching instead to its very own beat. Here's Thomas Lidner.
My impression is that the printing business in Germany is still a very viable business. After all, of course, we are experiencing a slow retreat of advertising money. We are experiencing a small decline of circulation of magazine sales. But on the other hand, it's still a huge market. If you look at the sales numbers, how many magazines are sold each day in Germany, or how many books are sold each day all over the country, It remains a huge market, and the decline is there, yes, but it's comparably slow.
Do you think Germans have a moral responsibility almost to correct the rest of the world, to correct this message? Because, of course, this is the world's fourth biggest economy, so maybe you need to be the ones to remind everybody of this message, because right now it seems that the paper industry, the book industry, it's slightly getting drowned out by a Wall Street narrative.
I think it's kind of my job to say yes to this, to answer that question with a clear yes. I don't think it is our job, or there's even a chance to tell other people what to do. I just know that in our culture, there's a strong tendency to keep up the idea of books, magazines, and reading in general. Many, many people are really doing their very best to keep their children close to written media and to keep the electronic media a certain step away from them, to at least find a balance between those two. And I cannot really see that there's a strong tendency of giving up the print business in favor of some kind of electronic business or products or whatever.
Do you think we're we're coming full circle right now. A major newspaper publisher like you, you've, of course, done many things digitally. Then again, you know, you're in any major train station or airport around the world, of course, you still see your print edition as well. Is it time to come back to a bit of print experimentation? Have we come full circle slightly?
I think we have to try new things out, and I think we have to convince our audience, not only by our readers, not only by the pure content, but also by the way we present it. And therefore, it's also about surprise, it's also about entertainment, and I think the German industry is doing a real good job. We see magazine launches each month. We see a very viable, a very energetic book business, a lot of authors. If you win a book prize here, you're really important in society. So things are important and remain important, and I think that is one of the main triggers that the industry is doing, I guess, comparably well.
Are we seeing a greater coming together of various print organizations? This started as a book fair, but it seems that they want to talk up retail now. They want to talk much more about innovation. I feel we're seeing more magazines and newspapers also coming in to this forum than ever before. There's a major, of course, magazine conference on in Toronto at the moment, but there seems to be a lot of emphasis on periodicals, also newspapers. Is this something the industry needs to do? And I'm not just talking about, you know, getting bulk discounts on, of course, you know, buying pulp. But is there maybe a little bit more harmonization between these companies, do you think?
I think what you can observe is two things. First, you see a consolidation in the industry. Companies are buying each other and getting bigger. The other tendency is towards innovation and differentiation, meaning that you try to find out what your brand can actually do for your readers or for your customers, and then you expand into product fields where you think your brand can be successful. So you have both things. You're shrinking at the one side. On the other side, you're expanding, and you are expanding actually into new fields. And what you see here at the book fair in Frankfurt is exactly that book publishers are thinking about magazines, that magazine publishers are creating books. So yes, things are growing a little bit more together.
Thomas Lindner there, CEO of the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, talking to me a little bit earlier in the week. And that's all the time we have for this very special edition of the show. A huge thank you to, of course, Marcus Hippie, Ben Ryland, Antonia Merzhäuser, and, of course, Claire Urban, who is very ably sitting right beside me, much closer than she normally does, managing, of course, all of the controls for the program. If you have any comments or queries, then do drop us a note to info@monocle.com. It's getting a bit noisy here, as you can hear. Remember, we're back in London next Saturday at the very same time. Of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes. I should also say, I'm going to be on the road with our editor, Andrew Tuck, next week. So if you happen to be in Singapore on Sunday, Bangkok on Monday, Hong Kong on Tuesday, Tokyo on Friday, we look forward to seeing you at our book signings. That's all we have time for here in Frankfurt. Goodbye.